Blog Talk Radio.
Damn. Stop it. Yo, we're live now, man. That's why.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live, don't concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way. A letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live, don't concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way.
Movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life. This is movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life.
Word is
any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. Any kind of dilly-dallying, that's the government. Any kind of pussyfooting, that's the government. Any kind of act that's designed to delay, or deprive you and me right now of getting full rights, that's the government that's responsible. And any time you find the government involved in a conspiracy,
I can never go back. Life without parole, upstate, shackled and trapped. Living in the hole, looking at the world through a crack. Fuck that, I'd rather shoot it out and get clapped. I've gone too far, there ain't no coming back for me. Auschwitz gas chamber full of Zyklon B. Just like the Spanish exterminating Tainos, raping the black and Indian women, creating Latinos. Mothers have upmade me out of self-righteous hatred, and now you got yourself a virus, stuck in the matrix, a suicide bomber, strapped and ready to blow. Lethal injection, strapped down, ready to go. Don't you understand, they'll never let me live out in peace. Concrete jungle, guerrilla war out in the streets. Nat Turner with the sickle, pitchfork and machete. The end of the world, motherfucker, are you not ready?
DJ Tony Drake.
This is DJ Tony Drake, a.k.a. Mr. Top Shelf himself. And right now, you're in tune to Your World News, where journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive. Here on yourworldnews.org.
You can't tell me life was meant to be like this. A black man in a world dominated by whiteness ever since the Declaration of Independence. We've been easily brainwashed by just one sentence. It goes, all men are created equal. That's why corrupt governments kill innocent people. With chemical warfare, they created crack and AIDS. Got the public thinking these were things that black folks made. And every time there's violence shown in the media, usually it's a black thing. So where are they leading you? To a world full of ignorance, hatred and prejudice. TV and the news for years, they're prejudiced. Foolish notion that blacks are all criminals. Violent lowlifes, and then even animals. I'm telling the truth, so some suckers are fearing me, but I must do my part to combat the conspiracy.
Welcome to another edition of Your World News. Thank you for joining us on this October 12th, 2012, for another special edition of Your World News. It's a pleasure to be joined again by the student correspondent and my co-host for the day, Mr. Timothy Baudoff Lynchen. We've got an extremely important episode today, and I say extremely important because in the studio we have five student activists on the campus of the University of Maryland that are students on the campus of University of Maryland, and they're joining us today to discuss a realm of issues regarding immigration and Latino issues in America. And we're going to be taking a very progressive stance, a stance and also a vision and a perspective surrounding these issues that unfortunately are obfuscated and marginalized and suppressed by mainstream media outlets throughout this country. We're going to be discussing SB 167 in the state of Maryland, which is the Maryland Dream Act. And so I'm looking forward to this edition. Tim, do you have any opening thoughts as we start to move forward?
I just want to say that I think this is a very pressing issue that does not get covered enough in the corporate media at the moment. And I'm very much looking forward to what these young activists have to say about the issue and how they can educate our listeners about it.
That's right. And so without further ado, we want to get into our customary opening news bit, you know, brought to us courtesy by Black Agenda Report. That's blackagendareport.com. That is one of the most insightful, progressive websites out there that provides real critical analysis and commentary and issues that, quite frankly, are simply not anywhere to be found in America's mainstream media outlets. And so we at Your World News, and Tim, I think I don't want to speak for you, but one of my favorite presidents, you know, won the election this past Sunday, and that's Hugo Chavez from Venezuela. And, you know, we're big supporters of him, and I have no qualms putting that out there, that Your World News endorsed the reelection of President Hugo Chavez and most importantly, the policies that his administration has been responsible for since he came to office in the late 1990s. And even though the U.S. government tried to press him out of power, to take him out of power through a U.S. government financed coup, he got back in there within 2 to 3 days, and ever since, I mean, he and his administration have really put forth policies that, quite frankly, it would be a much better country here in the United States of America if the U.S. had some of those kind of policies. You know, we're talking about free health care, we're talking about free education from nursery school all the way to tertiary education, higher education. We're talking about a completely government financed bank just for women that provides microfinancing for women. We're talking about an administration that has for the first time in the country's history, really embraced the indigenous roots of people, the first Venezuelans, as well as those who were brought to Venezuela as chattel slaves, the African population. It's been represented in a census that now we know there's minimally 50% of the population of Venezuela has African roots, and so it's something that we don't find here in the United States of America in any shape, form, or fashion. I would say, and I said before, the United States of America ranks as one of the top three most institutionally racist countries on the planet. And so let's take a look, let's take a listen to what Glenn Ford says, and then we'll hit the ground running with our special guest. And if you want to call in, as you always know, the call-in number for Your World News is 347-945-5191. That's 347-945-5191. So without further ado, this is Glenn Ford. I believe the name of this piece is Chavez Beats the Devil Again. So,
Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez won a resounding victory in last weekend's elections. If you've been following U.S. corporate media coverage of that campaign, that may have come as a surprise to you. Chavez is routinely referred to as a strong man and other variations on dictator by the U.S. media, when in fact he remains one of the most popular persons in all of Latin America. In the United States, his 10% winning margin would be considered a landslide. But all the American media can talk about after Chavez's latest victory at the polls is how much his lead has shrunk since the 2006 election, when he won by 25%. Every time Chavez and his Bolivarian socialists win at the polls, the corporate media have to eat crow. One would think that all that heartburn would force the U.S. press to finally admit that Chavez is the leader of oil-rich Venezuela because large majorities of its citizens want him in the presidential palace and are enjoying the fruits of his wealth distribution policies. It is also impossible for American media, which are mouthpieces for their corporate owners and take their cues from the State Department and the White House, to understand that most Venezuelans agree with Chavez when he denounces the imperialists in Washington. They knew what Chavez meant when he called President Bush the devil and said that he stank of sulfur back in 2006. Venezuelans remember how Bush backed a coup that almost toppled Chavez in 2002, a coup that was reversed by a counter-rebellion of the people and loyal soldiers. They remember that the coup leader's first act was to abolish the Constitution and start drawing up lists of people to be thrown into prison or worse. They remember the dark days when nearly all of Latin America was placed under the rule of generals allied with Washington, and the hands of the torturers and the death squads could reach into every family with impunity. They know who was the author of that nightmare, the United States. That's why Latin America is the corner of the world that has achieved the greatest success over the last 20 years in throwing off the dead weight of the North by rejecting the so-called Washington Consensus. And that's why, this time around, the Venezuelan opposition chose a candidate who pretended to be a leftist himself. Challenger Enrique Capriles, a young state governor, styled himself as a protege of former Brazilian President Lula da Silva, a more business-friendly type of left-wing politician. But Venezuela's poor know who the opposition really are, the affluent, mostly light-skinned people that live in swank neighborhoods and whose hearts dwell in Miami. The people who draw the cartoons in opposition newspapers depicting Chavez as a monkey and openly sneering at his mixed-race heritage, the heritage of most Venezuelans. They know what real democracy feels like because they remember what living under the yoke of a rich white minority felt like. Democracy is having a government that's not made up of those people whose hearts are in Miami. Democracy calls the top Yankee a devil, and the people cheer, and then the people vote. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. On the web, go to blackagendareport.com.
That was Glenn Ford and his usual critical analysis and no guessing. There's no reading between the lines with Glenn Ford's commentary, which I couldn't agree with anymore. I fully agree with everything he said. So with that being said, congratulations, President Hugo Chavez, and more importantly, congratulations to the people in Venezuela who have historically been oppressed and marginalized prior to the election of Chavez at the end of the 1990s, and may that revolution continue to move on and embolden other countries throughout Latin America and throughout the world in general. But we see the impact that Hugo Chavez's election has had throughout Latin America in places like Bolivia and Ecuador and so forth. And without further ado, I think we have one of our guests is actually from Bolivia. But I'd like to go across, just go across the room. If you guys could introduce yourself, your name, and anything else you wanted to say about yourself so that our viewers and our listeners can actually get a more in-depth, idea of who you are. I guess we can start with you.
Okay, so my name is Paula. I'm a senior philosophy and government double major. I'm a member of Unity College Democrats, but I'm also a member of Lambda Theta Alpha Latin Sorority Incorporated. And,
Hello, my name is Karen Guzman. I'm a senior at the University of Maryland. I'm studying psychology and sociology with minors in U.S. Latino Studies and International Development and Conflict Management. And I'm here representing Lambda Theta Alpha Land Sorority Incorporated.
My name is Francisco Aguirre Lopez. I'm currently a business major, and I'm in Hermano Villa Latina, Lenux Law and Fraternity Incorporated, and I'm a sophomore.
My name is Christian Delcid, and I'm also a senior here at the University of Maryland College Park. I'm an American Studies major with a minor in U.S. Latino Studies and Spanish Business. Both of my parents are Guatemalan, and I'm also an hermano of La Unidad Latina, and I'm from Fraternity Incorporated.
Thank you. Welcome. And I just want to get started right away, and I was going to throw this out to all of you. I wanted to ask you if you know, I'm making the assumption that some of our listeners and I guess for the first time our viewers, some may not know, they may be from a different state or country, we have international listeners. If you could tell them in detailed fashion, what is SB 167? And, you know, otherwise known as the Maryland Dream Act. If you could tell, you know, clarify what this is and why it's so important for you and the constituencies and populations that you represent.
So the Maryland Dream Act differs from the federal version of the Dream Act. It applies to students who have attended 3 or more years of high school in the state of Maryland. Their parents or their families have paid 3 or more years of Maryland income taxes. In order to be eligible for the DREAM Act, they have to have been brought here before the age of 16 to the United States from wherever their country of origin may be. Also, they have to have attained 60 credits from a community college prior to even being able to apply to a 4-year university.
Okay.
So what we're talking about really in essence is in-state tuition for those last 2 years of college, because they would have had to attend community college for the first 2 years. It's a really important issue. These kids, it costs the state of Maryland an average of $14,000 per year per student to be educated in public high schools in Maryland. So it's a waste of the state's investment to not allow these students to continue to pursue their education into college, you know, have a degree and be able to contribute back to our communities and economy in a greater way. So this is important because you're ultimately, I don't think that your citizenship status should determine your education.
That's right.
And the education, the access that you have to getting an education. And we just really think that it's an important issue, and we hope that it will pass on November 6th.
All right. There's a lot of myths about SB 167, the Maryland Dream Act, and in general the federal Dream Act. But what are some of the myths that have been put out there about SB 167?
Well, one of the ones that I think I'm really like strong about is the fact that people are equating this SB 167 to the saying that this will allow Maryland residents or other students to not be, you know, like, to take the seats. Like, these undocumented immigrants are going to take the seats of citizens, and that's not the case. Like, in reality, like, to apply to college, you need to have credentials, you need to be qualified. It's not an easy process, and no one is just going to accept you because of the basis of your citizenship. But what this is allowing is that these students who are deserving, who have all the credentials, have a great GPA, have great SAT scores, have the opportunity to have an affordable education by having in-state tuition, because after all, their parents are paying in-state taxes, Maryland taxes.
Right.
And the misconception is also that these students are going to take spots from Maryland citizen students. They actually still will be, like, although they will be receiving in-state tuition when they apply, they'll be, reviewed as an out-of-state student. So they're not going to be taking spots from Maryland citizens or U.S. citizens, I guess you could say.
Right. Do either of you want to chime in?
I mean, I guess, like, one of the biggest ones that as more of a national sentiment is the fact that they think this is like some type of amnesty or going to spike immigration up, which you wouldn't, because these students have already been here. They're already here. So the legislation is already, it's already identified the people that would benefit from it or, you know, fall under it. So it's not like, you know, someone can come over it next week and they'll be eligible for it. They wouldn't be. So, you know, the legislation is progressive in a sense that, you know, it already has an audience catered to it. And it's now that it just needs to pass so, you know, they can actually benefit from the legislation and see not only what results it'll have in terms of, like, immigration or the numbers that maybe will decrease, maybe they won't. But I think the biggest thing that, you know, you want to see is how this piece of legislation will help the internal infrastructure of the country, you know? of the state? Will there be more jobs? Will there be, a better economic turnout, given that there's going to be a lot more people going to school, maybe creating more jobs? I think that's what people need to be more conscious of. It's not necessarily, the numbers, but it's just how it's really going to affect, the everyday setting of with the state they're in. And I think that Maryland, being the progressive state that it is, it would be great for this state to pass it and be one of the first ones to actually be like, you know what? We care about our education system. We care about the economy getting better. We're going to pass the legislation and give it a chance and see what happens.
Right. So, set the precedent.
Exactly.
Set the precedent. Did you have anything to say?
No. You pretty much hit the nail with the hammer. I was just going to base it off feedback off the economical benefit because of domestic. Because the lives are already established in the U.S., so it's not like, after they get their education, they're going to go back. Like, everything is already established here, so it's going to be a huge economical benefit and a domestic boost in the workforce and eventually, nationwide.
Right, and we know that, I'm glad you brought that up, and we know that there was a study that was done a couple of years ago that found out that, because a lot of folks kind of think that they've been kind of programmed to think that there's just one kind of tax, and so they forget about, sales taxes. And there was a study that showed that undocumented workers, they contributed several billion, I think it was either $7 to $11 billion each year, in sales tax revenue. But before we move forward, you said something, Karen, that I think definitions are real key as we move forward in this interview. And so you were the one that started it, and you said undocumented workers. That's a lot different than what we hear sometimes when we turn on, often when we tune to whatever news media, whether it's MSNBC, Fox News, and they're talking about this. You'll hear somebody say illegal immigrants or illegal aliens. Still to this day, you'll hear illegal aliens. What do you think about that terminology, illegal aliens, and how does it contrast in a very stark manner between that and undocumented workers?
Well, we know that the purpose for that terminology is solely to dehumanize people, solely to alienate people and, put them aside as the other, so that they're the other category that no one can identify with, that they should deserve, all these injustices. And it just marginalizes them even further than they already are. So, we always see this, especially in Republican news sites and news shows. But I think it's just ridiculous that they have to use a word such as aliens, extraterrestrial, we're, not human, we don't have the same feelings, or we're not... we don't have the same, we're not biologically made just like anyone else, so.
It's a very racist term. Yeah, very racist term. And folks tuning in, we tend to have some pretty forward-thinking and culturally edified listeners on Your World News. But just in case somebody snuck onto the airwaves and is listening, that's fine. That's each one teach one. Just letting folks, you should also understand that these folks that somebody might look and phenotypically say, that's an illegal alien, which it's a very, very racist term. But those individuals that you label as such, even a legal immigrant, their ancestors, are really part of the first Americans, before the term America was even labeled to identify, these manufactured borders, their ancestors, they speak Spanish because their colonizers spoke Spanish. But, those folks that you can find in, the southwestern part of the United States of America, their ancestors have been there for thousands of years, longer than Europeans have been here. So that whole terminology, illegal aliens, is just really smacks into the face of those folks, their ancestors, and what happened, when that land and sovereignty was stripped away from them. And so, Tim, I think you have the next question.
A couple of our panelists already answered a lot about how the DREAM Act would improve the economic situation in this country and also allow in-state tuition for these students that qualify under the DREAM Act. making higher education more accessible. I want to ask you guys, in this country, very often people of color are stigmatized as being criminal. And we see that even through programs such as in New York, the Stop and Frisk program, where over 800,000 people were stopped and frisked this past year, and over 85% of them were people of color, Black and Latino people. So bringing this back to the DREAM Act, what effect do you think the DREAM Act would have maybe on crime rates, for example?
You know, do you mean what effect would the DREAM Act have in reducing crime rates, or do you what
right, so if the DREAM Act enables so many people to attain a higher education,
mm-hmm.
how would that reflect the social situation in America?
I think that it's very important to know that Latinos are not only the largest minority group in the United States, but the fastest growing. And if we do not have some kind of, if we don't make some kind of shift in our policy to allow these people to become educated, to allow our people to have greater access to better jobs, you know, be more contributing members of society, then what's left for them? What's going to happen? I mean, we have a very fast growing population and they deserve an education. They were raised here. This is the only home that they know. A lot of these kids were brought here at the age of 2, 3, 4. So I think education is always something that empowers, and I think that that's something that we should really take note of.
Yeah. And, I mean, studies reflect this over and over again. Like there's been so many studies done around the Maryland DREAM Act and how if students have more access to higher education, they're not going to be, like, you know, trying to find a side hustle, trying to, like, do some type of, like, quick money to get by, because in this way they'll have, like, an opportunity to have a higher-paying job. So it makes sense to give them a better opportunity to go to college and make it more accessible for them, like you said, Tim, so that they can actually have better-paying jobs and not be kind of confined to what their peers are doing just to get by, because, you know, everyone is struggling, everyone needs to get by. So if they can't have access to higher education, then what choice do they have left but to find some other way, maybe illegal, to get by? So this will just eliminate crimes and make it so that these people can become professionals and educate the generations that are under them.
Just to bring a different perspective, I mean, I can honestly attest that I've had my run-ins with the cops around here, and I'm already a college student. You know, I was born in the District of Columbia. I'm a citizen. I have nothing to worry about, but yet I can't be out and about just like anybody else and not worry about, you know, am I going to get pulled over today?
Right.
You know, am I going to get searched for no reason? Because I have, you know, at the airport, you know, any here around campus, like, you know, the numbers may look better on paper, but the reality of things is that, you know, the stigma that you mentioned is something that it's internalized by people. It's not something that's internalized by the legislation. Legislation is just a piece of paper with write on it. You know, and you're supposed to abide by the rules, but who interprets the rules? People do, right? And the people in our society, I mean, unfortunately, we internalize a lot of the things that are around us, the media, whatever it may be. But I think that in order to really see a change with crime, it has to start from the inside out. So, you know, having, you know, police officers be knowledgeable of legislation going around, being knowledgeable of the demographics of the districts or counties that they serve. You know, it can't just be okay that, you know, in their police report they put what they want or they, you know, cause a reaction from the person that they're, you know, encountering. You know,
exactly.
It would be great. I mean, I would love it if a piece of legislation would change the way people act or the thoughts that they have in their minds.
You're right.
And I think that, you know, the more knowledgeable that the people that are serving us, the community, are, then the better. You know, maybe they'll have a change of heart. They'll start to see things a little bit differently. You know, we are growing up to be a mixed population. So, you know, a lot of, you know, biracial relationships, you know, all those things come into account.
Yeah.
These might be police officers that, you know, may have a Latina spouse or, you know, an African-American spouse, whatever it may be. And if they see that this legislation may affect them or their future generation, you know, that's where you start getting a change of heart that comes from within the people that are serving us without having to, you know, use legislation.
You bring up some great points, brother. I couldn't agree with you more. It's impossible to legislate, you know, a cultural climate, you know, within any country that is aimed at, you know, decreasing, you know, racist, you know, stereotypically racist imagery and thoughts that people have about other people, people that are different from them. It's something that has to be cultivated. The seeds must be planted, and the more that people of color, Latinos, people of African ancestry, obviously Indigenous Americans, which, you know, are also represented by a large chunk of Latinos as well, Asians and so forth, the more, you know, those folks become, you know, fully integrated within society, you'll start to see these perspectives and these voices getting into school boards, getting into, you know, various, you know, like I said, school board meetings and positions of political power, if you will, becoming, you know, change agents towards even, like, you know, looking at, like I mentioned, the school board. When you look at, for instance, Texas, you have a school board that voted to basically rewrite the history books, all right? And it was a very regressive, right-wing, Eurocentric, you know, white supremacist changing of the school of the history books. And the scary thing about that is that Texas, the school books there, set the stage for the rest of America, and, you know, where, you know, the theft of land now, you know, they want to dress it up, and it's called, you know, and they want to make sure that it's broadly described as westward expansion. And we know about Arizona, SB 1070. You talk about racial profiling. You said you were born in D.C. If you were in Arizona and you're walking down the street, depending on what police officer or what sheriff is driving, especially if it's that little, you know, troll sheriff Arpaio, you know, driving around, you know, they're going to pull you over and say, hey, you know, come with me. You would come with me, and, you know, especially if you don't have any documentation on you. And sometimes, I mean, if I go out for a walk, if a lot of us go out for a walk, you know, around our block, we're not going to take our wall with us all the time. But these are the things that we have to change, and the only way to change that is to do that hard work and to cultivate an atmosphere where everyone's voices and perspectives and history is brought into the classroom, brought into the classrooms, you know, on the elementary school level all the way to university level on a comprehensive basis, so that, you know, when you have those police officers who are non-Latino, you know, and they see you walking down the street, or they see a brown man walking down the street, they've been educated in a lot different way than a lot of police officers have been educated now, and they're not going to make that brass assumption. They, you know, they're going to look at that person walking down the street similar to if they saw somebody walking down the street that looked exactly like them, you know, so... I couldn't agree with you more, and we have a lot of work to do, because it's not just SB 1070. I mean, we look at Arizona. I mean, they've got rid of, you know, and ethnic studies, you know, and it targeted, you know, it really targeted the Mexican population, people of Mexican ancestry down there, and so we have a lot of work to do. So I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, there's the political struggle, and then there's the struggle, the day-to-day struggle, where we have to infiltrate these school boards, and we have to have these teach-ins, and each one, you know, on college campuses like this one, as well as, you know, as well as into the community. So, you know, I really appreciate, like, the answer that you all gave. And I wanted to ask any and all of you to kind of give a plug, if you can describe what deferred action with the Maryland Dream Act is. What is deferred action, and what's that conducive towards? And also, I also, the second part of that question, I want to now, also in a few minutes and at the end of the show, if you can also plug what's going down October 25th, because I want people that are listening and watching right now and at the end of the show for them to get several plugs to understand the significance of supporting what's going down next week, Thursday, October 25th. Just anyone? Karen? Paco?
I mean, in terms of deferred action, you just want to know how the Dream Act.
Yeah, how you know, in terms of how it could help undocumented students gain greater access to work and work permits.
So okay, so exactly. So what deferred action is doing now is, you know, it's not the best type of legislature. Obviously, you know, it's kind of like something that's been done by the Obama administration. Obviously, the plot to get like Latino votes, but what it is doing is it is increasing the, it is giving undocumented students or undocumented people the access to work permits, and so these students are allowed to stay in America, and they're given access to have a job. Because what studies are showing is that, okay, well, these students have access to higher education, but at the same time, who's going to hire an undocumented citizen, or who's going to have, who can hire someone who doesn't have a green card? In many cases, we're seeing that companies and factories and all types of different places are getting kind of like, they're getting reprimanded for having undocumented people working for them. So what this is going to do is going to give not only access to higher education, but also access to having a job. So a job that can, that they can actually have, that can actually hopefully give them health insurance, because none of these policies give them health insurance. But if they have a work permit and their job does give health insurance, then hopefully these undocumented students can also have access to health insurance, which is something that is crucial. And should be a human right to everyone. But I think, what we're seeing with deferred action right now, a lot of my friends are actually applying for that, who are DREAM Act eligible youth, and they're in the process of it. And it's, like, really hard. It's really complicated. There's a lot of things that we're seeing, that any little thing can go wrong, and then you won't be qualified for it. But it does have its perks. Like, the whole work permit thing would be crucial for them.
What's going on? What is one of these things that you're mobilizing for that's going down October 25th, 2012, in College Park, Maryland?
So we're really excited to be having a rally for the DREAM Act on October 25th. That's a Thursday. It's going to be at 5 o'clock p.m. in the New Brew Amphitheater on College Park campus of the University of Maryland. This is an incredibly important issue. Like others have said, it sets a precedent, and we need to start the work to not only allowing these students who are very bright and who have grown up here to be able to go to school, but also, like Christian said, we need to start the work of actually changing how people perceive these students. That can only be done if you see them as your peers, if you see them, you know, doing the same things and achieving like you are. If we marginalize them and don't allow them to pursue an education, then those stereotypes remain. And I think it's really important to note that, you know, a lot of the things that you'll hear about the DREAM Act is that, you know, again, like Christian and some others mentioned, that it's amnesty, or that it would, you know, have a, increase a flood of immigrants into the country or something like that. But this is, there's already similar legislation has passed in about 13 states, and we haven't seen a mass exodus or, I mean, sorry, a mass influx of immigrants into those states that have passed it. That's a, you know, a lie to get you to be scared about passing the DREAM Act. This affects students that are already here, that have already grown up here, and who parents pay taxes and who deserve an education here.
That's right. Anybody else want to chime in anything regarding that? If not, Tim, you got the next.
Yeah, I have a question for just the panel, so anyone feel free to answer this. The Maryland Institute for Policy Analysis from UMBC recently published a report on the DREAM Act. Could you all speak to some of the results of that report?
I just heard about this, and it's exciting that we're having Maryland institutions actually doing research on this, because California, UCLA has been like prized for doing all their research, but we're glad to have a University of Maryland institution doing it. And what they found is that if the Maryland DREAM Act passes, it's actually going to give an additional $5 million in revenue to the state of Maryland. And this is because what they've gathered is that students who have access to higher education are hopefully going to have higher paying jobs, which means that they're going to actually be able to, you know, spend more money and donate back to the economy. And then at the same time, it's also going to reduce crime rates because these students are going to have access to higher education. So that's some of the bigger findings. There's controversy because the study does kind of speculate that these students are going to have access to higher paying jobs, but that's not always the case. You know, sometimes you graduate out of college thinking you're going to get a higher paying job. In reality, like, you might just get a minimum wage paying job or whatever. But so there's some controversies, but they did find that $5 million increase in revenue. All
right. That's good. I have a question, and it's directed towards my brother right here. You know, and we're going to continue to discuss the Dream Act, but you know, I like to make sure that being this is the kind of dialogue, as Christian you alluded to. These are the kind of dialogues that could lead towards if they were had on a regular basis within you know, even college, more and more college classrooms, state by state, community centers in schools, high schools, that could really go a long, long way towards, you know, educating folks about marginalized populations, people that are of color, Black, Latino, you know what I'm saying, Asian, you know, on and on and on. My question is I'd like to ask you, and I'm asking you because, you know, I recently heard you, you know, outside of this studio, you know, having a discussion, and I just love the way that you articulated it and really explained it. Can you explain, take us on a journey around an often untaught, very factual view of Central American immigration in this country? I know that you said that you're part Salvadorian and Guatemalan.
Yes, my father's from Morazan. And my mother's from Guatemala.
What don't most Americans know about Central American immigration? What pushed a lot of Central Americans to immigrate to the United States in the 80s? What led to that?
I actually wanted to touch on that topic because I was actually thinking, after what Paul and Christian said, that, you know, they're right. A piece of paper is not going to change the perspective of the people, but maybe if they understood the facts or maybe the history of what led to these large immigration waves, maybe then would they reconsider and maybe rethink, okay, maybe it's not so bad, you know, that maybe, you know, the immigration waves happen all for a significant reason. I mean, my father came here when he was 17 years old, in the early 80s, because Civil War sparked in El Salvador in 1979. This was because there was a large population of poverty in the country, and in the thing in El Salvador is, you know, you don't get free education, you don't get, you know, free healthcare, any of that, you know, you pay for it, you know, and a lot of students they protested one day, and then the government saw it and the military saw it as a threat, so they opened fire. And then after that, that kind of sparked that was the main reason why the Civil War sparked. So what happened was, during this era, the U.S. is actually going to Latin America, you know, trying to imperialize, you know, the resources and the land, you know, for their own benefit. You know, whether it is like in the 50s when the U.S. entered Guatemala to, you know, to take advantage of all the fruit and, you know, for the United Fruit Association. But what happened was the U.S. saw it as a threat because during this time, you know, you have the Red Scare going on in the early 80s, and you have President Reagan as president at this time. So, you know, the U.S., they send, in secret, by the way, they send millions and billions of dollars to reinforce the Salvadoran army and Salvadoran government, you know, to train the troops, to send them more ammunition, you know, more weapons, more artillery. And for what? Just to kill a bunch of innocent poor people who were just protesting for rights. And to the U.S., this was a fear of communism. So what happened was you have millions and millions of deaths, and you have a great man known, great man in Salvadoran history, Archbishop Monsignor Romero, nonviolent activist leader, you know, fought, you know, with words for the people. And you know, just to be threatened, and every day by day, night by night, you know, from the Salvadoran military and government, that he's gonna be killed, you know, for supporting, you know, and backing up the poor people. And what happened? He was shot in cold blood during mass. So what people don't understand is a lot of people, they left El Salvador and Central America for their safety, for their lives.
my dad left at age 17 because he wanted to be safe, and so he left, you know, and came here at age 17. My mother came here at age 17 as well, from Guatemala. But that's what sparked such a huge migration wave here, especially here in this area, you know, which ties again back to the Dream Act, because Maryland and the D.C. metropolitan area is known for having one of the most significant populations of Central Americans. And, you know, having a lot of them already, you know, their lives established here, having their kids already here, you know, studying, it'd be really unjust to deny them that education after, you know, it's, you know, the United States of America's fault that they had to leave their home in the first place to be here. And then, you know, you're making the move and then you're not giving them equal rights at the same time. Like, it's just unjust.
Right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And yeah, so, you know, as once again you explained that this is, you know, U.S. taxpayer dollars and the U.S. government itself that finance these death squads that you know, and I know a couple of folks that, you know, personally, you know, their families brought them here because, you know, the death squads were encroaching upon, you know, their communities, and in this case it was El Salvador as well, and they had to flee, and so they left, you know, their homeland, you know, an environment, you know, socially as well as weather-wise that they loved, you know, to come to a very cold environment socially, to come to the U.S. So that and you know, I think, you know, a lot more, you know, so-called Americans, you know, it would behoove them to really tap into this history and to look at a deeper context and to find something within their soul and their heart to find compassion for these folks who are forced by way of the U.S. government, forced out of their communities and are here now. And if there's no other justification, you know, for amnesty for these folks, that is as compelling a reason in my book as anything. And I'll say lastly, there's a thing called the School of Americas, which has been renamed. They try to rename it, you know, Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation. And it started in 1946, and since then has turned out 64,000 plus Latin American soldiers that have been used as these perpetrators of death, these you know, purveyors of death and death squads. And so the U.S. literally brought, you know, Latin American soldiers and officers to the U.S. to be trained in Fort Benning, Georgia, at this formerly, you know, known as the School of Americas, but still operates today, but just under a different name. And these folks went back to different places throughout Latin America and committed atrocities. They learned at this school. They learned how to torture. They learned how to torture with extreme ferocity. They learned how to kill, you know, more effectively, you know, if you will. And it's just sick. So, and every year, even though MSNBC, CNN, or Fox News and the like won't tell you about it, but every single year there are people that come from all walks of life and they converge at the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, a la the School of Americas, and they protest. They get out and they protest right outside there. And so I think that's something that folks really need to know. And there's a website called School of America's Watch, and I think it's just soaw.org. That's soaw.org. Go to that website. It's got a wealth of information. Educate yourselves. I you know, really appreciate you, you know, you telling that story and really educating us and our listeners. Tim?
I wanted to ask the panel, why would it be important for the Maryland Dream Act not only to pass in Maryland but also in other states, and what effect might that have on America as a whole?
The same reasons that it's important for it to pass in Maryland is the same reasons that we should pass it at the federal level. You know, these kids are deserving. They were brought up here. We've seen the economic aspects of it. This is not the only study. There have been many studies that show this. You know, there are differences between the federal version and the Maryland version. The federal version would be more of a pathway to citizenship, while the state version is not. But again, you know, there's no doubt that these kids, I keep saying it because it's true, they deserve an education. Your citizenship status should not determine whether or not you can be educated. And like he was saying, I mean, a lot of these, the families of these children have come here because of the dire circumstances in their countries of origin that have pushed them to have to come up with another solution, to flee. And they're now here and they're met with, you know, the harsh reality that they cannot go to school. So I think that's important. And I think that if we were able to pass it at the federal level, we would see the greater economic benefits nationwide, not just for the state of Maryland.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. I think that this notion of, I personally feel that a lot of, you know, maybe currently, you know, I feel Americans are really lazy in the sense that, you know, they're all depending on that, you know, the president's going to take care of every little thing mm-hmm. that they have, but at the end of the day, I mean, they're just one figure ahead of a huge institution that, you know, we're all part of. And I mean, me personally growing up, I was always taught that education was going to be what was going to change my life in whatever way I wanted it to be. And I think that that's something that we've shied away from for too long in this country, and it shouldn't be what is the president going to do for me, but what am I going to do for my country? Not necessarily for the president as a person, but what are you going to do to change what your environment is like? And I think that, that it starts at the educational level. And, you know, maybe, you know, changing it up, I don't know, I think that the United States is so big, and, you know, it's a very regionalized country, you know, not everyone's going to agree with certain things, but I think that every state has the capability of, you know, adopting a legislation that, you know, truly represents their demographic, their needs, whatever it may be, and I think that people need to go back to day one and be like, you know, I'm going to be the change that I want to see in the country, not who I'm going to elect for, who's going to, you know, this class I'm going to say, I'm going to make that, I'm going to be that change, because I personally have a lot of pride of being a Maryland student. I love going to this school, and you know, once I graduate, you know, once you start here, your first day of orientation, you feel that, you know, in 4 years I'm gonna change my life. I'm gonna change everything. And that's a feeling that students should always have and should always keep. And to deny that feeling to a person is, you know, you're not looking for long term, you're not looking for the long term benefit of the country. You're just looking very short term, and you're very being closed minded because, you know, the people that are complaining about this type of legislation, they're not going to be around as long to see what will really happen. Mm-hmm. You know, they're on their way out, unfortunately. I mean, you know, we're born and we die. Like, that's just how it works. But, you know, the purpose is for people that are coming after us. And education, once again, will be the determining factor. And if we want to turn our backs on education now, then, you know, the economy isn't going to be the only thing that we're going to be worrying about in a couple of years. And I think that it's time that we need to start worrying more about our internal infrastructure. And realize that if you want to see a great change, every single person wants to be part of that change, and it starts with school.
Right. I couldn't agree with you more. A more humane society, you know, being a part of that change, you know, which brings me to a question I want to target at you first, and then, you know, anybody else wants to chime in. But when I think of change, like one of the big changes that I would like to see, and, you know, if I could just snap my fingers and have it happen overnight, one of the first things at the top of my list would be that the United States' military would be, you know, shrunk down incredibly to the point where there's no way it could be deemed as an imperialist tool, you know, by, you know, this current empire known as United States of America, that it would be something that would no longer be taking innocent lives in places like Libya and Afghanistan and Somalia and Iraq and, you know, and Pakistan, especially when you look at, you know, Pakistan and Afghanistan, where these drones, and we just learned, you know, that the U.S. has already flown out and has already put, they've flown out, you know, multiple drones, and they've set them up right outside of Libya. So they're, you know, waiting to get the call to possibly execute some drone strikes in Libya, and using a pretext based on what happened on September 11th with what happened near Benghazi, you know, at the compound that
the U.S. ambassador and three other Americans were killed, and so they're using that as a pretext. And we've had this discussion before. Our listeners should know, our opinion on not just on what happened in Libya, but the facts that surrounded that wrongful, illegal bombing campaign that started with Barack Obama making the orders to bomb Libya into oblivion, and now 50,000 civilians later, they're gone. And so while we're talking about the military and changing society for the better, not only that it impacts, because I think those of us that are in the U.S., we have a responsibility. We have a responsibility with our solidarity, with other people throughout the world, oppressed people. We have to see solidarity within them, and because we're all, and look at ourselves as citizens of the world. And when we look at that, then we understand that, 15-year-old boy in Afghanistan who lost his life, by way of a drone attack named Abdul or Muhammad. I mean, how is he different than Ayanna Stanley Jones or Sean Bell or Oscar Grant or Trayvon Martin? We have to look at them as being it's a wrongful death in and of itself. And so one of the things I really, on top of that, don't like seeing is people of color, brown and black people, killing other people in the name of imperialism. And so I wanted to ask you, because we've had discussions off air, and I'm a strong supporter of the DREAM Act. I think it's ridiculous that it hasn't been fully passed and implemented. But one of the aspects that I don't like about the DREAM Act is one of the strings that comes along with the federal DREAM Act, and that's the military provision. Could you tell us what that military provision is?
So basically, the DREAM Act says that the federal DREAM Act says that if you have an opportunity to either go to college, sign up for higher education, or you do a military component. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because when I was in high school, I was an ROTC cadet, and I was kind of like in that environment where, recruiters would come to my school every week, and they would talk to us, and they would say, hey, there's education, you guys can go to college, but there's also the Air Force, and this is what we're going to do for you. We're going to give you, money for your education. You just have to serve 4 years. And I never really paid too much attention into what they were saying, or I guess like who was saying it, because I found out that a lot of them were actually like brown people. Like a lot of them were Latinos, a lot of them were African Americans, and I never really identified or questioned that until I came to college and I learned more about it. But there's also a really great documentary on this. Do you know what it's called? It's on the recruiters that come to college.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I can't think of the name either.
But yeah, okay. So I was watching that as well, and then that just made me change my mind completely. But I was set on maybe going to the Air Force, and I wasn't really thinking about going to college at first. But then my parents they freaked out, and they were like, "No, you need to go to college. You can't go to the Air Force." But it's just sad that our people are being recruited by our own people to kill other people that are just like us. So it's this whole system that no one really thinks about unless someone makes it obvious to you that the recruiters pay attention, the recruiters are Latinos, the recruiters are African Americans, and who are they targeting? You don't see a lot of white people. I never saw a lot of white people going to those information sessions. I always saw Latinos or African Americans, and it's almost as if they didn't think that we could do anything better with our lives, as if they didn't think that we can go on to higher education, that this was always like our venue. And it's sad that the Maryland DREAM Act, or the DREAM Act in general, has those strings attached, like you said, which is implementing that system. And that documentary says that, back in the days there was a draft system, so if you're a male, you had to sign up for the military. And what this is doing in our communities today, this is a draft system. This is our own people drafting our own people to kill other people. So it's sad that they found a way to continue the system, and we're the victims of it.
The way I see it, for something to get federal support, the way I see I mean, I understand, completely understand, you know, the whole military aspect of it. But the reason I see the purpose of having that in there is because when people, you know, when there's, like, controversial legislations or things that have to do with, like, minority issues or whatever, the majority feel comfortable when they see an effort of assimilation. And that's something that, you know, people don't really think about it because it's like, oh, you know, we're past that, but it's still there. Like, people will feel a lot more comfortable voting on legislation on that these people, this community that's going to be, you know, being, are going to benefit from it, or having an attempt to assimilate into our society. And
it should be maybe acclimate, too.
Exactly. So
instead of having to assimilate, you know.
So it's like, you know, it's, you know, you have to do this because it's what America does. And if you, you know, as you can think back as far as you can, just with the draft, you know, I'm registered, you know, if anything happens, I'll get drafted. I'm registered once I turn 18. But it's, you know, small things that people don't, you know, goes over people's heads. It's like, always, it's like, you, if you serve, then you're seen as a hero here. That's part of, you know, the American landscape, you know, very patriotic. And that's what, you know, what, this is what the society, you know, identifies with.
Right.
And if they see you in a uniform, they'll be like, you know what, I can see through, you know, my racial prejudice because you're in that uniform and what the uniform represents. So not only would we accept these people a little bit more, but the fact that they're trying to do something that is seen, you know, as heroic, or, you know, to serve this country is just like the biggest honor you can have, you know, you can do to the country supposed to, right? So I think it's an attempt to really have people, you know, outside of the community that it would benefit to see it as, okay, you know, at least I'll be doing this. Maybe I'll look at it. And then, of course, it doesn't hurt to have higher numbers, you know, to wear those uniforms either.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit it right there. It's what the uniform represents, you know, what it represents. Unfortunately, more folks don't see what, like, individuals like myself see that uniform representing. I don't necessarily automatically see that uniform and see it as these folks are heroes, you know. Unfortunately, I see sometimes, most of the time, the complete opposite. And, you know, we know there have been individuals who have been white, black, Latino, who have been forced into the U.S. military and been forced into it based around socioeconomic standards and statuses, you know, feeling that was their only way to get, you know, money for the GI Bill, and they weren't, you know, it wasn't explained to them that the GI Bill, like, for instance, you know, there's a lot of gray area that the average doling out of money for a GI Bill is not even enough to pay for half of a state institution and most state colleges and universities. And so, you bring up a really good point, and I think that's the broader vision that we have to have in terms of changing what the U.S. military is seen as. You know, right now, folks throughout Central Asia and different parts of the world see the U.S. military nowhere different than what some people would see as a terrorist. They see it completely as a terrorist organ, and you know, I happen to agree with them. So I think you had something.
Yeah, I think you pretty much almost said it all. I think it says a lot about a country when those people that the U.S. proclaims as heroes are people that are killing innocent men, women, and children. And I'm not saying that all people who serve in the military are doing that voluntarily or by choice, but at the same time, what does that say about our society? You know, a society that has been built on the extermination of civilians, indigenous people, and the stealing, violent stealing of labor from the African continent. So when we look at some of the things the U.S. military has done, like being the only military in the world to ever use nuclear weapons, wiping out cities, you know what I mean? Right now committing drone strikes, which over 80% of the time kill civilians. When we look at those things, that slogan, support our troops, really brings up some question of whether how much sense that really makes in terms of supporting the military. And I think you brought up a very good point that it's a shame that U.S. society can only respect respect the DREAM Act if that section is added with the voluntary, with not voluntary, but mandatory military service.
And also another point to bring up is the fact, yeah, and that's one of the biggest things. It's just unfortunate that some people have been forced into this where they've had to take lives, you know, based on, you know, being forced into a fighting force that has put them in positions where they've either lost their own lives or taken innocent lives of people that, you know, and I say that because we know that there have been African immigrants and there have been, you know, some Mexican immigrants as well. This was a couple years ago where, you know, we saw the U.S. government, because their enrollment was low, they, you know, they you know, would get, you know, some of these immigrants and say, if you serve, if you do a two-year tour, you can, you know that's the fast track and you'll get citizenship. And some of those people that got in for those reasons, they never came, well, they came back, but they came back in body bags, you know, some of them that did. And it's just, it's just really, really unfortunate and just reeks of, I mean, it's just of just, I you know, I just almost at a loss of words. It's a tragedy in and of itself, inside itself and inside itself. And so, again, I as we start to come close to the end of this program, I want each of you to, if you can give your closing comments, you know, regarding anything that you want to, you know, discuss around this issue or any issue that we've discussed or even haven't discussed. And I'll say this is what your World News is about. This is what we built it for. And in the essence of it, I'm a strong supporter, not just of having you guys in here because of the issue, but because I've long said that Black and Latinos, we must, you know, start to unify and come together in solidarity. You know, it is of its essence. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever that in some communities, you know, we're fragmented or segregated or so forth. But individuals like yourselves represent, you know, that vanguard, those folks that see that vision, you know, why it's important for there to be solidarity amongst people of color. And, you know, so I really thank you guys for coming on. And if there's anything that we can continue to do in the future to support you. And matter of fact, you know, Tim and I will be out there with our cameras to make sure that we film that rally. And so, you know, I just wanted to thank you guys for coming on and most importantly for the work that you've been doing that you continue to do and will continue to do as we move forward. So we can start with you, you know, with your closing comments. And please incorporate, let folks remember that if you're in the D.C. metropolitan area on the 25th of October 2012, there's going to be a major rally that, you know, if you're not doing anything, if you don't have extenuating circumstances that would prevent you from going, please go to this rally that they're going to talk about as well.
So, first, thank you for having us. This is a really important issue, and, you know, I would urge all of the listeners and, you know, anyone, you know, that will later watch this or hear about this to really reconsider, you know, the misconceptions that are out there about the DREAM Act. Do your own research. You know, you can look into these economic studies that have been done about the benefits. It's going to be question 4 on the Maryland ballot on November 6th. So when you go to vote, you can mark to vote for, the keyword is for, question 4 on the Maryland ballot. You know, we will be having the rally on October 25th, 5 o'clock p.m. at the University of Maryland College Park in the Muir Amphitheater. We're going to have some great speakers. We're going to have some dreamers, so students who would be eligible for the DREAM Act will be speaking. Some activists from CASA in Maryland will be there as well. So, you know, everyone who's listening to this, if you can make sure to vote for 4 on November 6th, come out to the rally on October 25th, and talk to your friends, talk to your neighbors, your coworkers, anyone in your community about this. You know, there are a lot of misconceptions out there, but we see the benefits. We know that this is the right thing to do, so let's get it done.
And I just really want to thank Solomon and Tim for having us here today. It's been an honor to be here, and I just want to close with two things. So first, to the listeners and viewers, even though we're on Latino right now in this panel, this is not just a Latino issue. Oftentimes, we are the face of this, you know, the Dream Act, where it's always about Latinos, but that's not the case. Like, if anything, if this whole planning for this Dream Act rally has taught me is that through education, just people just come together, like, so closely together. We're working with so many great groups. We're working with Community Roots. We're working with NAACP on this. We're working with a bunch of multicultural sororities, different types of fraternities, and other sororities as well. And it's just been incredible to see everyone coming together for this one great cause. And we look forward to seeing everyone out there on October 25th, which is a Thursday at 5 p.m. at the Nimbrew Amphitheater. And the second thing I want to say is that, as you know, everyone has echoed in today's show, this is crucial, I think, especially now that we're facing, Solomon said, all the horrible things that are going on right now in Arizona. You know, our ethnic studies are getting taken away, our books are being banned. And if anything, like, we can be that change within a system to kind of, like Christian said, like, we need to be the change, we need to stand up. And if anything, education, I'm sure, will give us that reason, and give all these other dreamers the reason to be the changes that they want to be in their communities. You know, we can't deny so many people the opportunity to be the next politicians, the next doctors, the next leaders in our society. So I think it's crucial that we support the Dream Act. As Paula said, vote for the ballot question number 4 on the election. And thank you.
Just another thing I want to say is that, again, thank you everyone for having us here, and change can happen politically. You just have to really keep at it. Just educate yourself with the facts and the history, and really make sure you understand both sides and really dig deep. I met Solomon this past week. We got into a little discussion with a group of individuals who were well educated on facts, you know, so we, you know, humbly them, and that actually made a difference to them. You know, they took notes, and they were actually shocked as to what they learned, and reconsidered the research. So, you know, just make sure you stay humble, and you really just educate, just stick to the whole education thing here. Yeah, I just want to say thank you again for having us here. I mean, there's nothing better than having, like, an open space where you can just, you know, share your ideas and realize that, you know, you're not the only one walking around with the biggest conscience in the world. So, you know, it's definitely great to have that, you know, share that feeling with other individuals. I mean, I think we've covered a lot today, and I think that the main thing I encourage people to do is just actually, you know, take what we've said and you know, add their own ideas to it. You know, do your research, you know, Google things if you don't understand them, and, you know, register to vote if you haven't, and, you know, we're all students, you know, we never stop learning, and I think that that's something that we should never forget and not take for granted. You know, I'll leave you guys with a quote that I got from my professor, like, yesterday that really stuck out to me, and she said that the smartest students I know never start from scratch, they are building. So, you know, each day, just take it as another building block to what it is that you're trying to, you know, reach or you're trying to get at, and, you know, right now, you know, the Maryland Dream Act, you know, we've been building ever since, you know, proposed, and, you know, we're trying to keep building and building, and, you know, we need as much support as possible, and, you know, just thank you for anybody that's been listening.
No, it's our pleasure, and you know, publicly say this, you know, any time that you need to have an open platform and an open space to come on, you know, and get an issue out there, you know, we're not, you know, the corporate media, so unfortunately we haven't reached a million yet, but every episode we average, you know, in the thousands and thousands of listeners, and so you know, so the you know, there is a large net that will get out there, and so as you were saying, you know, each one teach one. I mean, so if we're reaching several thousand, you know, each episode, and this episode I expect not to be unlike the rest in terms of its reach. You know, there's potential, a large potential, because it really takes, you know, a few people out of that to be edified and to, you know, to be that those change agents, and that can really take this campaign and I say it's just a campaign of equal rights, of social justice, you know, to the, you know, the very next level. So this Your World News is really Your World News. This platform is yours. You know, whenever you need it, you know, just let Tim or myself know, and we look forward to having you on. So, Tim, do you have any?
I just want to thank all our guests for coming out today and sharing their wealth of knowledge with us. And I also want to encourage you all to continue to do this organizing, to do this crucial work, even after the DREAM Act has passed or been rejected, since these are issues that we deal with every single day, even on this campus where, you know, it was a fight to get this African Cultural Center that we're sitting in right now on campus. And so I think that we all have to do our part to make sure not only that there's equality in education, but also within the educational institutions that we are being educated in. So thank you all for coming out. I learned a lot myself today, and I hope to have you on the show again sometime soon.
And actually, most importantly, before we go, is there a contact? Is there a contact information? Folks, somebody listening right now says, damn, I want to get involved. But I'm in California, I'm such and such, or I'm in Southern Maryland, I want to get involved, but I don't go to that school. How can I get in contact with you know, any of you guys or the point person, you know, for this?
So both of our organizations, both Lambda Theta Alpha, Latin Sorority Incorporated, and Lambda Upsilon Lambda Fraternity Incorporated, are working on this. So you can find us on Twitter, LTA_Upsilon, and I believe you guys are LULPHI, that's PHI, one word. You can add us on Twitter. We'll be sending out more information via Twitter, also Facebook, the Upsilon chapter of Lambda Theta Alpha, Latin Sorority Incorporated. We have more information on that page about the rally and about the ways you can get involved. So definitely try to find us on there, and hopefully we'll be seeing some of these viewers or listeners on October 25th. And
yeah,
for your support.
Definitely. If you get it to us, we'll post it also on our blog, which has even a larger reach, contact reach. And as we close, I want to say thank you to our two cameramen, Alante Fitzgerald and Andrew Malenge. You know, really appreciate the time and effort. You guys can't see them because they're behind the camera, and obviously if you're listening on the radio, you can't see them either. But they're two young men that you know, their contributions, you know, not just being behind the camera, but in social justice efforts really precede themselves. So thank you. And since Andrew, one of your favorite MCs, is Immortal Technique, I'll let Immortal Technique take us out and close the program. And let me close my eyes and click on this. Here.
Yeah. World, motherfucker. I'm from where the golden diamonds are ripped from the earth, right next to the slave castles where the water is cursed, from where police brutality's not half as nice. It makes the hood in America look like paradise, compared to the AIDS infested Caribbean slum. African streets with a passport and American gun, from where they massacre people and try to keep it quiet, and spend the next 25 years trying to deny it. I'm from where they cut your hands off if you make a fist, and niggas sold coca cause the job market doesn't exist. No. Except slave labor, modern day company store, and peacekeepers don't ever, ever, ever come here no more. From where the bombs that they used to drop on Vietnam still have children born deformed 8 months before they gone. I'm from where they lost the full meaning of the Quran, cause heroin is not compatible with Islam, and niggas know that but grow that poppy seed anyway, cause that rude rap parachute does not come every day. I'm from where people pray to the gods of their conquerors, and practically every president's a money launderer. From where the only place democracy's acceptable is if America's candidate is electable, and they might even have a black president, but he's useless cause he does not control the economy, stupid. Lock and load your gun where I'm from, the third world son, into many places, but I'm third world born. Gorillas didn't run where I'm from, the third world son. You polluted everything and now the third world's gone. The water's poison where I'm from, the third world son. 700 children died by the end of the storm. Revolution will come where I'm from, the third world son. Constant occupation leaves the third world fall.
I'm from where the Catholic Church is some racist shit. They help Europe and America rape this bitch. They pray to white Spanish Jesus, whose face is this? But never talk about the black Pope Galatius. I'm from where Soviet weapons still decide elections. Militaries like the mafia, you pay for protection. Catamite sex clauses with the country sells. And rich white businessmen make the best clientele. I'm from where they too pussy to come film Survivor. And they murder Coca-Cola union organizers. I'm from where the justice system is stopped. Podrido. Fuck government, niggas politic over perico. Rebelde conocido, enterrado vivo. Como otro argentino desaparecido. Cause Rico laws don't apply to the CIA. And motherfuckers make sneakers for a quarter a day. I'm from where they overthrow democratic leaders. Not for the people, but for the Wall Street Journal readers. From where blacks, indigenous peoples, and Asians were once slaves of the Caucasians. And it's amazing how they trained them to be racist against themselves in the place they was raised. And you kept us caged in, destroyed our culture and said that you civilized us. Raped our women and when we were born, you despised us. Gentrified us, Asian provocateur divide us. And crucified every revolutionary messiah. So I'm a start of global riots, if not even your fake anti-communist dictators can keep quiet. Fuck your charity medicine, trying to murder me. The immunizations you gave us were full of mercury. So now I see the third world like the rap game soldier. Nationalize the industry and take it over. Lock and load your gun where I'm from, the third world. Son to many places, but I'm third world born. Gorillas hit and run where I'm from, the third world. Son, you polluted everything and now the third world's gone. The water's poison where I'm from, the third world. Son, 700 children died by the end of the song. Revolution will come where I'm from, the third world. Son, constant occupation leaves the third world.